Hey there, Roamers. Welcome to the Roam in Your Home podcast and YouTube channel, where we get to hear from full-time RVers, unpack their experiences, and learn actionable advice to help you roam in your home too. I'm your host, Jamie Williams. Thank you so much for being here. Buckle up, my friend. Let's get ready to go on an adventure together right now. Hey friends, welcome to episode 9. Thanks so much for being here. Last week, I shared the first half of my conversation with Chris and Gary from Big Dog RV, and they shared so much valuable information. I had no idea that the state of Pennsylvania requires a special license to drive a big RV. Did you know that? If you haven't listened to that episode, go right now and listen and come back for the second half I'm sharing today. You won't want to miss last week or this episode. I just love how Chris and Gary travel full-time in their motorhome with their two Great Danes, one that is 130 pounds and the other one that is 180 pounds, and their little 6-pound rescue. They are such an inspiration for people who have big dogs and wonder if they can still live this RV life. They share not only how you can do it, but how you can have an awesome time making amazing memories together with your pups as well. And if you're a dog lover like me and your pup is an important member of your family, you will love following Chris and Gary at Big Dog RV on Instagram and Facebook. This was such a fun conversation. I loved getting to know them better. Now let's jump right back into our conversation where I ask them more about their travels. So without further ado, here's Chris and Gary. So you guys have been a lot of places, and how many states have you been in so far?
We have our sticker map, and after this summer, we haven't been up the West Coast. So we're actually in Southern California now for the winter, and we're moving up the West Coast for the first time. And after we fill in those West Coast states, then I think we're going to have just some hit and miss states, a couple of the Midwestern states, and then a couple out on the East Coast. So I think we're going to be shy about 6 states at the end of this summer that we haven't visited yet.
That is amazing. Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. I have seen where you are now and it looks so beautiful. I'm excited for you guys to see Big Sur and
yes,
the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
Yes.
Our first contract, we were in Daytona Beach, Florida, and our first therapy contract was in San Francisco, California. And being from Ohio and living in Florida, we've only been before that just between Ohio and Florida. We really were never west of like Indiana. And so going all the way from East Coast to West Coast was just life-changing for us. That's when we really fell in love with traveling and seeing all the different things that we've only seen on TV, and, you know, to see the Golden Gate Bridge for the first time. It was so exciting. And then each weekend we would go somewhere and we did the Big Sur drive. You guys are going to love it.
Good. I'm excited.
It's going to be so awesome. Oh, that's honestly, with all of the travels that we've done, it's still one of the best views we have ever seen. And in fact, when we see like different countries, when people will show their views of different countries like Ireland and, you know, just different beautiful scenes, I always think, oh, is that Big Sur? You know, because it looks like it. It's so gorgeous. You're going to love it. So that's going to be exciting. I can't wait to continue to follow your travels and see everything and to hear what you guys have to say when you see it. That's so great. And then I'm going to ask you the hardest question that we get, and it's really hard to answer. And I still don't even know the answer that we would give now. And I think this answer keeps changing as you travel. But if you had to give us the top 5 locations of your travels, what would they be?
Isn't it funny that that is the hardest question? And I agree, it is the hardest question. And we get asked it all the time. And I'm never ready for an answer, you know, and I always feel like I need to have an answer ready. But you start really thinking about it, and to give a really true, honest answer, it is a hard, hard question.
It is.
And I would say that my top favorites are not necessarily Gary's top favorites. So I know that we both really loved the Grand Canyon, and not because it's the Grand Canyon. It's not for the reason that we went there. We went there to see the Grand Canyon because when you travel full time, that's one of the things you have to see.
Right. Oh yeah.
And the Grand Canyon was wonderful. I recommend everybody see it. But the reason it was our top place was that we boondocked in the National Forest just south of the Grand Canyon, south of the South Rim. And we had a spot that from our site, we could see herds of wild horses. We could see elk. And it was a amazing because of where we were. We could walk these mountain roads and the dogs got out to play and to run. And it was just an incredible experience because of where we were. And then the bonus on top was that the Grand Canyon was nearby. So that was absolutely probably the top of our list. And then South Dakota near Rapid City. Of course, there's so much there. There's Custer State Park, Deadwood, Mount Rushmore, Wind Cave National Park, Crazy Horse Memorial. There's so much to see there that we really liked South Dakota because there was so much to see. And it would be interesting to go back. And we've got lots of great memories there. The places that took us by surprise, the Gulf Coast of Alabama. We were in a state park where the sun set over the Gulf of Mexico every night, giving us this display that was incredible. We had no idea it was going to be so wonderful. We just went there, you know, for a week to see the area and just loved it. Mackinac Island. You know, that was another place where we went, you know, we were just going to spend a week here, we said, and we really, really enjoyed the ferry ride over to Mackinac Island. So that was fun. And then this is one that you probably never heard that took us by surprise. We were wintering in Yuma a couple years ago, and we heard that we could go out an hour west of Yuma is a tiny, tiny little dot on the map called El Centro. It's in California. It's in the middle of the desert. And the Blue Angels have a practice field there. So their winter practice grounds for the Blue Angels is in El Centro. And we went out to El Centro one afternoon and stood out in the middle of the desert next to this little military airport and watched the Blue Angels practice. And they were so close over us that we had to hold our hands over our ears. You know, you felt that rumble. And I'm telling you, it felt like we could reach up and touch them. They were flying so close. It was like our own private air show. And that's something that stuck with us. I think at this point, it's one of the very few places we've gone back. We went back this year at the first of the year on our way to California. We went out of our way to go down to Yuma so that we could watch that one more time. It was incredible.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you said that. And that is on my list now because I am a huge fan. I love the Blue Angels. I love the Thunderbirds. Like, air shows are my thing. And oh, to have that experience, I would go crazy.
Here's your tip. Take your plugs because the first time we got there, there's a handful of cars there watching. And one of them was somebody that came out and watched every day. And she said, they're going to take off in a few minutes. You need to grab your earplugs. I'd never been there before. I said, I did not bring earplugs. And she said, oh. And I said, oh, I'm thinking I should have brought earplugs. And another guy ran over. He said, I have extras. I carry extras. And he gave them to me. And I was so glad.
Oh, wow. Good to know.
They fly over so low that you've got to have some kind of ear protection. It just vibrates through your body. It's an incredible experience. It really is.
Okay, that just literally moved up to number one on my bucket list. I cannot wait to go. Yeah. That's why I love asking people this, because honestly, everything that you mentioned, we have not been to. Now, we've been to the Grand Canyon, but we've not boondocked where you're talking about, where your best location. So that's on our list. And it's so cool to hear about different people's experiences because, yeah, it makes our bucket list grow. Like every time we cross off a bucket list item, it doesn't get shorter. It gets longer because we're always adding to it.
I have the same issue.
Right. And I love that it's so hard to answer the question, like, what's in your top five? Because that means you've been to so many beautiful places that you love that it's really hard to narrow it down. And I think that top five does change as you travel and you add to your experience. But I love those things that you shared. And is it Yuma?
Yuma. Yeah. Yuma. Yuma, Arizona.
I love that. Oh my gosh. That's so cool. And one of the things when we were first starting out and doing our research, and of course, none of our family and friends were supporting this because they had no idea what RV life was about. But you always hear about, oh, that's scary, or, oh, you know, bad things happen on the road and all these things. And so we kind of were a little bit worried if we're going to be able to handle this. And is it going to be a scary situation, whether it's something that happens while you're driving or just a bad area that you stay in? And honestly, in the 6 years that we've been doing it, we really haven't had any scary situations of like areas We've had a couple like tire blowouts, but nothing that was really, really scary. Just wanted to ask you, have you guys been in some scary situations, and how do you really just stay safe on the road?
So, you know, we talked about that. That's one of the things that you talk about before you hit the road. And we made a pact that if either of us ever felt uncomfortable in a place, that we would leave. We're on wheels. We can leave. Let's just do it. So we got that. We know that we are willing and ready to leave if we need to. But have we had to? No, we haven't. There was one park in Idaho years ago, actually before we went full time, and we both kind of got weird vibes, but it wasn't bad enough to leave the park. But the very last night we were there, there was a large off-leash dog that rushed up to me as I was walking our tiny little 6-pound dog, Audrey Cricket. And I could tell that he was growling as he approached. He was off-leash. There was no owner inside. It was after dark. It was hard to see him. It was a big black dog. And I ended up yanking on her leash. I hauled her into me, and the dog came rushing up to me, and he stopped before he reached me. And at that point, I was yelling, waving my hands. I'm rushing at the dog to get him to back off. And he was focused on this little dog that I had clutched to me, you know, and I think it could have ended very badly if I hadn't snatched my dog up. But, you know, other than that, personal safety, no, we have not felt that we needed to leave a park, which I think is wonderful. As far as staying safe on the road, road safety is a whole different issue. You know, for personal safety, we do have the means to defend ourselves if we need. But at the same time, there are very few people who would come toward us with 300 pounds of Great Dane staring at them. So we kind of have our own built-in safety, a safety thing. And honestly, the dogs are both very friendly. They love to meet people, but they are also very in tune to us. And I am sure that they would very intuitively protect us if we were concerned about a situation. They read our feelings, and I know that we wouldn't have a problem with protection from them if we needed to. The other side of safety is road safety, you know, and you've got the TPMS so that you hopefully can pull over before you have blowouts, you know, or something like that. You know, what can you do? There's not a lot, you know, other than maintain your, whatever your rig is, keep it as up to date on maintenance as you can. We also have CoachNet in case we have an issue. We know that CoachNet will come out, and they have actually. We had a radiator issue last summer, and they came out and towed the motorhome for us, and it was totally 100% covered. They had it towed to a service center where we could get the work done that we needed. So I think that we've got our roadside safety through our roadside plan, and personal safety, I think we've got that covered too.
Oh, I love that. And I love to hear that CoachNet, you've really had some good experience, because, you know, you never know if it's really going to be as good as they claim to be. So that's great that you've had good experience and it didn't cost you anything.
Yeah. And CoachNet is one of the more expensive roadside assistants, but we've had them long enough and used them a couple of times to the point that at this point, I would not trade them out for another roadside assistance. We've been pretty happy with them.
Oh, good to know. And everything that you guys are talking about, I'll include links in the show notes and then links on our webpage when we do the blog post about this podcast. And that way you can share any, if you have any affiliate links too, we'll put those in there. So I wanted to ask you, with all your travels, did you guys ever have any blowouts or any issues that you kind of had to deal with while you were traveling? And if so, how'd you deal with it?
So, you know, I think anybody you talk to that's been on the road for any length of time has small issues. We've had slide issues several times. Our dryer quit drying. We called mobile RV techs for them. And that's just when Google is our friend. We just Google RV tech near me, and we've had very good success finding an RV tech near us. We had our ice maker go out once, and we just called, since it's a residential refrigerator, we called a regular appliance repair person who came out to the park we were in and fixed it. And then one of the reasons we bought the brand Tiffin that we bought is because they've got a good reputation for their service center. And we've gone down to Red Bay, Alabama, actually probably yearly. We go down and just have little things tweaked here and there, and they have done those in their service center. There are a lot of techs in that area that started out at the factory and ended up starting their own repair businesses. And we've got our favorite techs now. We've got their phone numbers. We can text them when we need guidance. And that was one of the deciding factors on buying the rig that we have, was that they give us that safety net that we can use. And I wish we didn't have to use it as often as we do, but you know, we're in rolling earthquake weeks here and things happen, things break, and you just deal with them. So I would say the biggest thing at this point that happened is that last summer we had our radiator overheated as we pulled into an RV park. The whole rig just completely shut down and we had to give it time just sitting there in the checkout lane waiting for it to cool down some. And we called CoachNet right away. They said we're going to send out a tow truck, and they towed us to a Freightliner service center to get that fixed. We ended up staying in the parking lot of the service center. They actually gave us a 50 amp power hookup, and thankfully our tanks had plenty of water and the black and gray tanks were empty, and we stayed there for about a week and a half waiting for the parts to be delivered and installed. So the worst part is that we missed our week in Cape Cod, so we're gonna have to go back to that someday. We were in Connecticut. But if you're just patient and you take a deep breath and you ask the right questions, you can work through all of those things. It may not be what you want to be doing. I'd rather be in Cape Cod seeing what is wonderful there and touring a lighthouse, but it's something that we got through. So it's just something you work your way through. It's okay.
Yeah, we had a similar situation. We were on our way from Ohio to Florida for a wedding. We were really excited about seeing our family that we haven't seen for years. And, you know, all the cousins were going to be together for the first time in like 10 years. And we had a leaf spring snap on 95 in South Carolina. So we had, thankfully, roadside, and they towed us to a truck stop that actually had a repair shop on premises. But we were there for a week waiting for the part. That was with our fifth wheel. And so we did actually boondock without even being prepared for it. But, you know, it just works out. We missed the wedding, unfortunately, missed seeing everybody. But you do what you got to do, you know. And honestly, everything seems to just work out with the right attitude. And so I've learned to make our plans in pencil during this RV life and just not be so set on arriving somewhere at a certain time. You just need to always be prepared for the what ifs. And, you know, you just get through it and it helps you to learn for the next time.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And my family is getting used to me saying, I've got you penciled in, you know, because they know that the dates are something that we're planning on getting there. It's kind of a range of dates. And this is sort of what we're aiming for. And we're just not so rigid as I used to be.
That's exactly it. I was definitely a planner before, and I learned to lighten up a little bit and be a little bit more flexible. So that's good. And it seems like you two get along so well. And I'm sure that you already had a great relationship prior to hitting the road. But, you know, a lot of people, they're not used to being in an RV. They always ask us, how do you do it? How do you live in such a small space together? And we laugh because we think it's not hard at all for us. And, you know, we got along prior to this, and I think we get along better now. But just always like to ask couples that get along so well, are there any tips to your success?
I think that's another question that's hard to answer. I think you really have to have a special relationship with your traveling partner. You have to love them and appreciate them more than anything. You have to understand that they have their own hearts, their own jobs in this life, and you might have different ones, and you just have to be patient with that person. I think it comes down to having that special friendship that some people just have. And if you don't have that before you hit the road, you're not going to develop it on the road. So make sure you've got it before you hit the road, because it's not something that's just going to come around.
I agree. Yeah, if you didn't get along prior to hitting the road, it's not going to get any better.
Exactly.
And so that's a little bit of advice for people who are definitely considering this life. But what's another tip that you would give as far as advice goes for people who are really doing some research and thinking about deciding to do this RV life? What's some advice that you would give?
So I think research, you know, is really the first thing. We did so much research. I think we actually did a lot more than the average person would do. But at the time, I was still working full time. Gary was preparing to retire. And then, you know, the first year of his retirement, when he was looking for something different to do, that was our research time. I retired young, to be honest with you. I probably would have, if we didn't have this dream of going full time, I would have worked 10 more years. But we were in a financial position because we had kind of prepared for this for so long that I could retire. So I did, but we weren't in a hurry. So we knew, first of all, that in order for this to work, because we have the dogs, we have something a little different than a lot of couples do. And we wanted to make sure that the dogs that we were bringing along were going to be comfortable and that we were comfortable with them and they were comfortable in the motorhome, or it wasn't going to work. And I really, really wanted to make this work. So we knew exactly by the time we found our RV, we knew what we wanted. We knew the size. And then we hired an inspector, and we did buy a used unit in 2018. We bought a 2014 model that had only been in service for 3 years, and somebody had just part-timed in it. They took a couple trips in it. So we hired an inspector. It was 900 miles away. We were in Pennsylvania. The rig was in Missouri. We hired an inspector, and you can hire an inspector whether you're buying new or used. And the inspector came out, and we knew exactly what everything. There was one little issue. One of the burners wouldn't light on the stove, and that was the only thing that he found that didn't work well. So we knew exactly what we were getting before I ever even bought the plane tickets to fly out there. We flew out and drove it back. I knew exactly what we were getting. So that was from research. I was very comfortable buying it basically sight unseen after an inspection. So, you know, I think that's important. And also, if you're going to live in it, there's a big difference between something that you're going to camp in and something you're going to full time in. And I hear a lot of people saying that, you know, they're buying campers and then trying to live in them full time and finding that it's not holding up like they want it to. So I think it's kind of important to make sure that what you're buying and how you're living, you're not camping, you're living in it. So it is full-time life still. And sometimes I have to remind myself to slow down. Actually, Gary reminds me to slow down. Again, I'm the one with all the curiosity and I have to see everything that's there. He's okay saying, we'll come back someday. Me, I want to see everything while we're here. So he reminds me, let's slow down a little bit. Let's take a week off and just slow down and just have a little bit of life. Just day to day. I think you have to practice being patient. Life on the road takes more time to do things than you think they will, more time than it used to in a house. You need to be patient with other people, not just your traveling partner, but other people that you meet in RV parks and things like that. It requires a lot more patience than I expect. And kind of on that same vein, you have to learn that some things are out of your control. I am a planner. I want everything planned out no less than 6 months ahead of time. And I just can't do that in this life. And I had to learn that some things are out of my control. As somebody who wants to be in control of everything and plan everything and being very rigid, that was hard for me, is to let go of that. I had to learn to kind of go with the flow. RV life is going to be challenging, and there have been a number of times that we had to pivot. So we've gotten good at saying, oh, well, that didn't go as planned. We can come back another time, and that's okay. So a rigid person is going to have a harder time in this life than somebody who can just kind of go with the flow. So I think those are the big things. Just know that things are going to go wrong. And so when things do go wrong, it's very easy to get upset about the situation because, you know, when we were trying to get to Cape Cod and our motorhome was overheating and we had a radiator issue, we had to remind ourselves that it wasn't the end of the world. We can come back. We can do it again. It's okay. Let's not be so rigid. So I think that's the biggest thing. Don't be rigid. Do your research ahead of time so that you know what you're going to be living in. And then once you're on the road, you have to be less rigid and ready to go with the flow.
That's some really, really great advice. I am the same way. Like I said, I've always been a planner, realized that I need to be more flexible, and it was hard adjusting, but it's, you know, so much easier now that you don't have that mindset of this has to be done in a certain day and it can be more flexible. It definitely makes for a happier life for sure. And then I love your recommendation about the inspection. I was not aware that you can get an inspection on everything. So that really does give you a lot of peace of mind, especially buying a used rig, that you are making a wise investment and that it's going to hold up. I mean, there's no guarantee of, you know, the future with just an inspection, but it will definitely save you a lot of money as opposed to just driving off the lot and then finding out even, you know, a couple miles down the road that something went wrong. So that's great advice. I love that. Where did you find your inspector? You said you just Googled it?
It's online.
Okay.
Yeah. So the NRVIA, the National, National RV Inspection Association, and it is a national association, and they train RV technicians, RV inspectors, I should say. And we just Googled, again, we bought a rig in, it was just north of the Ozarks in Missouri. And so I just Googled RV inspection in Missouri, and it gave me several options. I called the one that was closest, and he was happy to go out. It was not cheap, I'll be honest. It was about $650. And then we added, I think, $120 because he also tested the fluids. So it ended up costing us around $750. But we knew that, again, we were buying a rig sight unseen. So we factored that into the cost of the rig. And it was worth it to us because we got the man who was selling it, a private individual, sold it. And he discounted the price of the rig. And that allowed us to afford the inspection. And we knew exactly what we were getting before we ever even bought the plane tickets. And in the end, it cost us a lot less to do it this way than if we had bought something locally. And when I say a lot less, I'm talking $20,000 less to do it this way. It was so worth doing that to save that money.
Oh, definitely. And you could have wasted the money on plane tickets if you would have had to go out and inspect it yourself, and you still wouldn't even know really what to look at, but you could have missed something, you know, because you didn't have that certification as the inspectors, and still could have just wasted all that money. So I love that. I love that recommendation. I definitely am going to consider that for my next rig too.
I would not buy a rig, new or used, without having an inspection first. I think it's money very well spent.
Yeah, so smart. Definitely sounds like it. And now I have two final questions that we get asked a lot that is kind of funny because the first one is really not as hard as everybody anticipates it. It is, how do you get your mail? And so you told me that you kept Pennsylvania as your domicile state, but where do you get your mail at when you travel?
So initially, when we did our research for domicile states, we had decided to domicile in South Dakota because a lot of our family's from the Midwest. It kind of made sense. And we ended up going to America's Mailbox, and we had a contract with them for several years, and they received our mail with the intent that we had that set up before we went full time, and we intended to just transfer our domicile to South Dakota. So what it turned out is that our daughter, about the same time that we were going to be taking off, she bought a house, and we had sold our house and we had to have an address for our driver's license. We weren't ready to change our domicile state yet because we needed to drive out to South Dakota to do that. So we ended up using her address of her new house for our driver's license. So essentially, Pennsylvania sees us as residing at her house, which works great because honestly, we're there during the summer months anyway. So that worked great. Then we really started researching domicile in South Dakota and found out that our insurance, our medical insurance was going to go up, our vehicle insurance on both the motorhome and our truck were going to cost more if we transferred out of the state. The registration was going to cost more. And I mean significantly more. It was going to be a couple thousand dollars more to register it in South Dakota than if we just stayed in Pennsylvania. So we looked at the benefits of transferring. A lot of times people will domicile in South Dakota, Florida, Texas because of tax purposes. And we had the same tax benefits in Pennsylvania. So in the end, it made more sense to just stay right where we are. So our official address is our daughter's house, and we ended up canceling our contract with America's Mailbox. We actually used it for a couple years. It worked fine, but we do so many things online. We transferred almost everything online, and there were months that would go by that we would have nothing for them to send, and yet we're paying them a monthly fee to have that mailbox. So last year, we actually discontinued our contract with America's Mailbox. We have all of our mail sent to our address, which is our daughter's house, and she goes through our mail for us and forwards stuff to us when we need. And we haven't needed anything. Right now we're waiting for our tax documents, but before that it's been several months since we've had her send us anything. So that works out well. It's actually our domicile state is we stayed in Pennsylvania and we use our daughter's address.
That's exactly what we did when we moved from Florida. We just used my dad's address that was there, and he, you know, would get our mail and then send us pictures of stuff that he thought that we'd be interested in. And then we'd say, go ahead and open it or forward it if we needed to. And that works out nice. A lot of people are doing that, just using a family member's address, and then they can get the mail, and that makes it easier. And then as you travel, it's easy just to kind of order packages from Amazon or whatever and have it sent to either an Amazon locker or RV parks, or even I just heard from another interview that I did last week that you can also send packages to a post office. You have to call ahead, make sure that that's okay, but they will hold a package for up to 30 days for you, which I didn't know that. So that's really interesting.
We just did that. We just picked up a package. We're in a park now that will not accept our mail, and we had to order some things, and we had it sent to general delivery to the post office, your nearest post office. And yes, you can call ahead, just ask if they will accept general delivery, and you send it to that post post office with your name, you do have to have ID because they don't want to hand your package to just anybody. So the person that the package is addressed to has to go in with a driver's license and you pick up your package.
That is so good to know. Yeah, very good. I like that option too, because I was not aware that you could do that. So good information. And so I think the second question we get asked a lot is, how do you make money on the road? And you said that you both are retired. I was just curious, do you do anything else for additional income as you travel?
So we did for a while. You know, he worked 44 years for the same company. So he has actually a very good pension. And then he's got Social Security, qualified for Social Security last year. So with his small Social Security and his pension, that's what we live on now. You have to keep in mind that we also knew for a good 20 years we were doing this. And so we had some investments that we made and lots of savings. And we just planned and planned and planned and, you know, put all that away. The money that we made from selling the house, we put into savings and some investments. So it's kind of sitting there waiting for at some point. I hope that we're doing this for the next 20 years, but eventually we're going to have to come off the road. And I want that money sitting there so that we can buy something else when we need to. But the money that we use to full-time really is his pension and Social Security. Now that means that I created a budget before we ever took off, and it's simple. It's just a Google spreadsheet, and I'm very rigid. Even into our fourth year now, I log every expense that we have. I have our money coming in, our money going out, and we follow that as closely as possible. I wish I could say that we stuck very closely to it, but yeah, we've gone over a little bit each year, but we've got that savings to kind of be our safety net, and that's okay. The first year and a half, I also had some side income. As I mentioned before, I was the executive director of a nonprofit animal rescue. And when I announced to them that I was going to be retiring, they asked me to stay on for, you know, they said, can you give us about a year so that we can find the right replacement? And I agreed to do that. It ended up taking about a year and a half to hire the person to replace me. And during that time, I continued doing all of those duties that I could remotely. So that was, of course, during COVID, and everybody got very good at Zoom. And so we did a lot of remote work for them. So I had a decent income that first year and a half, but I knew that it was temporary. So we were just careful about it. And honestly, that first year and a half was the most expensive year anyway, because that's the year that you're thinking that you don't have one thing that you need. So you end up buying that, you know, all the gadgets that you have to have and some that you don't need to have. But you know, that's how we bought our solar panels, our lithium batteries was that first year. But for the most part, we're just living on the pension and Social Security.
Good information. That's great. You guys really planned ahead, which is so smart to do. A lot of people kind of think about this last minute and are not as prepared. So that's awesome that you guys have a safety net, which is so important.
It helps us. And like I said, the budget, I think it's very important to have a budget so you know exactly where your money's going. And we are surprised sometimes that, you know, we figured out in that first year that we can't go out to eat as often as we were. And our sightseeing, we're doing more hikes and walking and things. You drive a little less. So you learn where you're spending a lot of money and where you need to cut back a little bit. So the budget was very important.
Yeah,
you begin to adjust your spending when you can look at that budget and see where you're spending the money.
So smart. So smart. Yes. Having a budget is really, really important to see, because nobody knows what is going to entail with this RV life, with how much money you're going to spend with housing and gas and all the things that you're really not sure until you do it. And that's really good. Yeah. To have it written down so you know what you're spending and so you can adjust, you know, appropriately. I love that. This has been such a fun conversation, and you guys have given us so much really valuable tips and tricks that we can learn. Even, you know, us being on the road for 6 years, I learned a lot from this conversation. So I know that our listeners will too. I want to find out, what is the best place for our listeners to follow more on your journey? Is it through Instagram, Facebook? Are you kind of both? Or is there any other places? Do you have a YouTube?
We can be found on Instagram. I started an Instagram account because I wanted a way to document our travels. It was really for ourselves and our family. And then we found out pretty quickly that people were enjoying following along on our journey. And so the Instagram account became a lot more robust, and I enjoy posting our travels on Instagram. I also have some family and friends that only do Facebook. So I do have a Facebook. Both of them are under Big Dog RV on both Instagram and Facebook. I am more active on Instagram than I am Facebook. So if somebody contacts me on Facebook, it might take me a little bit longer to get back to them, but I am on there. I do see it.
Awesome. Like I said, we'll go ahead and put links to everything in the show notes and also on our website. But this has been such a fun conversation. I've loved getting to know you guys better. I love your dogs. I can't wait to meet you on the road and pet them and get my picture taken with them.
That would be wonderful.
I'm sure you guys have that often. But thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for your time today. And I cannot wait to see you on the road.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Aren't Chris and Gary wonderful for sharing so much great information? If you haven't already done so, please be sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at Big Dog RV. Also, share this episode and last week's episode with a dog lover in your life. Visit roamandyourhome.com/bigdogrv to share both of these episodes and the links to their social media. Come back each week because I have so many fun interviews coming up. You won't want to miss these great conversations filled with so many awesome tips and travel information. I learned so much and I know you will too, so come back each week. Thanks so much for listening and I hope to see you on the road. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Roam in Your Home podcast and YouTube channel. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe to our show and consider giving us a 5-star review. It's free and would mean the world to us and help us grow. If you know anyone who would also enjoy this podcast, please share it with a friend. I would also love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook at Roam in Your Home. Come back next week for another fun adventure. But until then, stay safe and we hope to see you on the road.